being the last day of unleavened bread, we've done our best to remain physically de-leavened. We've done our best to remain spiritually de-leavened. And we've shown determination in obeying the word of the Lord to do that. From the English Standard Version, I'll read from Exodus chapter 12, verse 15. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven out of your house. For if anyone eats leavened, that which is leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. Prior to the first day of unleavened bread, we thoroughly de-leavened our homes, our properties. And as we did so, we hopefully were not listening to the music of our choice while doing that, but rather thinking and looking for spiritual parallels that have this way of unfolding themselves as we clean toasters and read food ingredients. Personally, I was very surprised to find baking soda in a bag of just gyro meat from Costco. Just beef and lamb strips, and it had baking soda. What for? Don't know. But the spiritual lesson for me was that sin can be living, not just in the most unexpected places, but that it can be living in a place that we know perfectly well that there certainly isn't. And we, in our lives, we know sin can't be there, but in reality, it very easily can. As we find in 1 Corinthians 11:28, just as we knew to examine our food labels prior to the first day of unleavened bread, prior to Passover, that chapter talks about examining ourselves to make sure that we don't take the Passover unworthily. Spending more time on physical de-leavening and less time on spiritually de-leavening ourselves, examining ourselves, which is the de-leavening of our souls, is a sign of imbalance and one that we need to address. I'm very guilty of that, and I'm sure some of you are also. Every year I intend to fix that imbalance, and I still fail. When we are imbalanced, then we are more prone to sin. It's like how wars are won. You've heard of the phrase low-hanging fruit. It is often the weak and the stragglers that die first, being picked off by the enemy. There's an example of that in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 17 through 18. Chapter 25, beginning in verse 17, and this has a unleavened bread tie-in. Remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt, how he met you on the way and attacked your rear ranks, all the stragglers at your rear when you were tired and weary. And Amalek did not fear God. Even in nature, you find predators going after the young and the weak and the vulnerable, like lions going after wildebeests. But we can avoid being vulnerable and weak by exercising due diligence. For example, not hanging out in inappropriate or dangerous places. Or other examples of not being vigilant, not monitoring what we put into our brains, either from media or our own poor choices. In other words, we can stay strong and not be spiritually weak by developing and then exercising spiritual muscle. Today, I'm going to cover four areas that will allow us to leave the spring holy days with a greater strength moving forward. When the sun sets tonight and we each go to grab whatever fluffy, yeasty things that tickle our fancies, whether that be cheeseburger or pizza or chocolate cake, what happens inside our minds, say, 24 hours later or 3 days from now or 7 days or 14 or more days? What happens up here? Do the spring holy days principles just fall behind a freshly closed door? Do we just go forward out into the world like we did before we began the deleavening process prior to the holy days without even skipping a beat? I'm going to give you four new steps to better forward you in order to spark our spiritual growth. How many of you have heard of Marie Kondo? Okay, a couple. She's a Japanese organizing consultant. She has a humongous following, her books and videos and TV shows. She helps people to pare down their belongings and to organize their household in the most efficient manner. Her unique viewpoint is to start over, but to do so with the approach of new beginnings. And to do that, one has to purge that which is no longer beneficial. And she determines or measures the term beneficial by her distinct styling, asking the decisive question, does this item that you're considering, what to do, are you contemplating what to do with, does it spark joy in your life? Does this item I am considering what to do with, does it spark joy in your life? And she defines spark joy as you feel it when you hold the puppy or when you wear your favorite outfit. It's a warm and positive feeling. For instance, for the ladies, you might have 3 white blouses in your closet. Marie's approach is for you to determine which of these 3 blouses sparks joy in your life. And if they do not, get rid of it. But she has another unique approach. You do not go through each item in the closet or in the drawer. Instead, she has you throw everything in a pile on your bed at one time. And she does it this way so that you're confronted with just how many you have. And then you keep only those items in the pile that spark joy. But this has a spiritual parallel in our lives, this approach, and it would behoove us to learn many of the physical lessons and then convert them to spiritual ones that she uses. But today's message is not about Marie Kondo, it's about you and me. So I'm going to give you four slices of spiritual unleavened bread. Four areas or steps that parallel physical deleavening. And those four slices of bread are find, remove, sweep, and fill. Find, remove, sweep, and fill. Let's start with the first slice of unleavened bread, to find. Logic would tell you you cannot find if one is unwilling to look. But the Bible backs that up. Matthew 7, chapter 7 through 8. Matthew 7, I'll begin in chapters and verse 7. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. In verse 8, for everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks, who looks, finds. And that's the deadly thing about vanity. You don't realize you have it. You don't see a need to look. When you can see it in others, but you see no need to look for it in yourself, you're dead. Proverbs 16, verse 18 backs that up. Pride goes before destruction. Proverbs chapter 8, verse 13, I'll read from the King James. Proverbs 8, verse 13, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, to hate pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the froward mouth. God says, do I hate? If God hates it and we're doing it, then we're dead. And the only hope that we have is repentance and His grace. So we best be looking for sin so that we can find sin. King David wasn't looking for sin. He wasn't looking for it inside himself when he sinned a multitude of atrocious sins when he self-justified the Bathsheba scheme. But God sees all and knows all. And he sent the prophet Nathan to fully open David's eyes. And you can reference 2 Samuel chapter 12, 2 Samuel 12. But we should all be like King Hezekiah, who never took his eyes off of God, as you can read in Isaiah 38, so that God can add or will add years to your life, as in his case, rather than take them away. That was slice number one, to find. Let's move on to slice number two, to remove. Chapter 12 of Exodus describes the first Passover, the lamb's blood on the doorpost, and eating no leavening, and taking only unleavened dough with them as they journeyed out of Egypt. Brethren, aside from Egypt being a great but pagan nation, who also enslaved the Hebrews, forcing them to forget God's laws, profane his holy days, etc. The symbolism of Egypt as sin, and subsequently the Hebrews leaving Egypt, parallels the coming out of sin. There's a whole other layer of parallelism, and that is leaving sin behind. Have we considered that the Hebrews leaving behind their homes and their leavening were in essence removing themselves from sin? Yes, God was the power behind that transition, but without that transition, how were they able to find their sins when they were very much drowning in them? And so without the ability to see their sins, it became a necessity to have to remove oneself from sin. The point being, the first two points or slices of unleavened bread are intrinsically linked. You and I cannot remove ourselves from sin unless God Himself gives us His Spirit to first see sin. Nor do we have the power to remove ourselves from sin, but we can only do so when we look to God and find Him. Let's take another viewpoint. Since 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 7 through 8, 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7, therefore purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Did you notice the word purge at the beginning of verse 7? That is exactly the method that Marie Kondo uses. When all the clothes are thrown in the ginormous pile on the bed. And that's exactly what you and I are supposed to do when we're told to examine ourselves before Passover. We were to pray and meditate and fast and Bible study. So that then we could empty our spiritual drawers and closets. Only to see, the point being, to see one giant heap on our spiritual bed, the totality of just the amount of personal sins that only our eyes can see, are able to perceive, which is only the tip of our icebergs of sin. And so we are to take in that image of that pile and to let it sober us and to center us and to accept that we each have way too much sin. And it's only with that perspective that one can only accept that there is a need to remove. And so we are then to go through that pile and to choose only those sins that we know would spark joy in our life once we get rid we've rid ourselves of them. We choose the sins to overcome that we know would feel so much better to not have them. That would spark joy in our life. We humanly cannot go through the entire pile of these spiritual sins on our bed because it would overwhelm us. It would suffocate us. It would destroy us. So out of his infinite mercy and his love, every year he has us examine that pile and to take in, is the size of that pile slowly getting lower each year, or is it growing? He would have us pick just a few more garments of sin year by year, so that together you and I can purge our filthy rags to make room for holy garments. And you can reference that in Isaiah 64, verse 6, and Revelation 7, verse 9. Isaiah 64, 6, Revelation 7, verse 9. So that's the second slice of unleavened bread to remove. Let's move on to slice number 3, to sweep. Dwell on how well that we swept the leavening out of our homes. How well have we swept the leavening out of our souls, out of ourselves? Isaiah chapter 43, verse 25, 43:25. I'm going to read from the Holman Christian Standard Bible. God speaking here, it is I who sweep away your transgressions. Why? For my own sake, and remember your sins no more. So, brethren, if God is willing to sweep away our sins, then do we not think that we have a moral imperative to do the same? What was our attitude when we were de-leavening, sweeping away our sin? What sort of unspoken analogy were we using as our broomstick? Was our determining factor, well, I'll only clean out things that would contain things that be the size of a slice of bread, unleavened bread, and not bother with things that are smaller. In other words, crumbs versus slices. Does it even matter? I don't know. What does God say? Let's look at the principle espoused in Luke chapter 16, verse 10. Luke 16, verse 10, I'll read from the New King James. He who is faithful in what is least is also faithful in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. So if we do our best to please God in the least, then we can expect nothing but great things. When we sweep our spiritual floors, let's be sure that we are sweeping the full floor and not just where people walk. A partial job done is a job not done. A partial job done is really a job not done. The disciple Judas is another case in point. He was called by Christ. He followed Christ. Yet his own floor had not been fully swept, and that allowed Satan to enter. That was slice number three, to sweep. Let's move on to slice number four, our final slice of unleavened bread, and that is to fill. Once the room is swept clean, there's an extremely important need to immediately fill that room, not to wait. Immediately fill it. What is the point if we remove all the furniture in a room, in our spiritual room, and then we don't bother to put anything back? It just leaves a giant empty place, a complete waste, a lot of work for zero result. Segue that into the spiritual parallel. Find, remove, and sweep the remaining sin in our life, and then, if we fail to fill it up, then we have left our spiritual armor completely exposed. You've been waiting for this one. Here it comes. Matthew 12, verse 43, the perfect analogy. Matthew 12, verse 43, from the NIV. When an impure spirit comes out of a person and it goes through arid places seeking rest and does not find it, verse 44, then it says, I will return to the house I left. When it arrives, it finds the house empty and swept clean. The furniture removed, the floor barren. Clear indicators that this home has nothing in it to fill it. When you see no need to fill your soul, and to do filling your soul is putting more godly fruit into your spiritual room, to fill it with godly knowledge, then you truly cannot see if you don't see that need. Verse 45, then the impure spirit goes and takes with it seven other spirits more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there. And the final condition of that person is worse than the first. This is the danger of not filling. Substitute sin for the impure spirit in this parable, and the point gets made the same. Fail to fill is a plan to fail. Fail to fill is a plan to fail. You can find sin, even remove it, even sweep it clean, but if you fail to fill that empty space where sin once lived inside you, you could very well, that parable says, become worse off. It cannot be said enough the importance of us not sitting on our laurels, not seeing the need to fill. Philippians chapter 1, verse 9. Philippians 1, verse 9. And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight. This is wisdom. It's to abound. What is abound? This is talking about growth, continual growth. Just like what Joseph did to his brother's bags when he was second in charge of Egypt, we need to fill our empty bags with much spiritual sustenance for our journey forward through the famine of this world, in order to sustain us through the coming difficult and current times. Samson had been given a very special gift, and he failed to keep his bag filled and allowed sin to re-enter his life, and he did this several times. But I have a question. How do we fill? How do we fill the process? I'm going to give you two examples. My son Josh is a bartender at a luxury hotel. Jim is smiling. He knows the exact order of specific liqueurs whose precise densities allow each type of liqueur to sit on top the one previously poured. And that way, none of the layers sink or mix with the layer below it. And it's an amazing display of layered chemistry. But the Bible actually details this process in a spiritual recipe. Example number two. If you want to plant a tree, what are the steps for putting that tree into a hole in the ground and then to fill in the hole? First, I get my shovel. Then I dig a big hole in the ground. And then I lift the tree I want to plant by the root ball and gently place it in the bottom of the hole. Then I take my shovel and I dig into the dirt pile that I created when I emptied that hole, when I first made it, and I take the first shovelful and turn and toss that dirt on top the root ball. Next, I get a second shovelful and do the same. And so shovel scoop by shovel scoop, I repeat this layer by layer, and I build up the dirt fill until the hole isn't a hole anymore. It's level with the ground. Layer by layer is how God expects you and me to grow, in layers. He gives us the specific methodology for which we are to follow, and he gives it to us in great detail. You'll find this in Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 through 23. The book of Galatians chapter 5 and verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is, here's the layers, love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And here's an explanation of that specific order. Here's how we fill. We must begin with love. God is love. It starts with Him loving us. And when we are called, we feel that love. And the first fruit that we bear is wanting to return that love in kind. Joy, when any of us feel love, then our spiritual endorphins kick in and we feel the next layer, joy. And what spiritual layer sits on top of joy? Peace. Peace brings us itself. When we feel love and joy, don't we all feel at peace. Next layer of fruit, forbearance. That's kind of a old King James word. Today we would use patience. However, when we are at peace, then it's so easy to be patient. And that's why God chose patience to be the next fruit after peace. After patience, God expects us to put on kindness. I don't know about you, but when I am in a patient state of being, I can be so kind. But if I am impatient, then kindness fades and sometimes fails. Have you noticed that each fruit that I've described are leading us down a path of meditation? I feel it. Do you? We began this divinely inspired meditative session with feeling love. We then layered joy over that, and our spirits became calmer. Peace, like a soft blanket, falls next on top of our souls. Another layer drifts down, patience, followed by the soft warmth of kindness. See what I mean? Just chilling. Another reason I chose to bring in the fruits of the Spirit inside this message is that the fruits of the Spirit uniquely point to the very next holy day on God's calendar, the Feast of First Fruits. Fruit for thought. Next layer on how to fill in that space as we remove sin out of our lives. Goodness. Goodness floats on top of sin, of kindness. As a fill material, goodness is not available everywhere. It has been in short supply for a very long time. But it is plentiful in the same place that you will find kindness. Faithfulness is actually the spiritual strength to attain goodness. Gentleness is also a strength as we continue. For gentleness is an absolute requirement when having to deal with the ninth and final fruit, self-control. How hard it is not to want to wring the neck of someone that has wronged us in some way. That's where gentleness comes in. We must source our strength from gentleness if we are to display the fruit of self-control. And likewise, when we are tempted, when we're about to spiritually lose it, if we lack self-control, then our ability to produce the fruit of gentleness leaves us with an open powder keg, only awaiting a single spark to ignite and destroy any gentleness that we may have had. These two are intrinsically linked. Nine fruits for four slices of unleavened bread. What a perfect spread and divinely delicious. 4 points for each slice of unleavened bread. Find your weaknesses and sins. Remove them and strengthen your spiritual muscle. Then confirm that you've removed it by sweeping it clean. And then fill it full with godly fruits. Let us all go forward tomorrow, asking God to help us to find, remove, sweep, and fill.